This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. This is my co-host here, Adam Murray. I'm gonna introduce him first this time since I've been jipping him a little bit lately. So, Adam Murray, what's going on, man?
Not much. Ready for some more NBA previews.
You ready for more? I think this is going to be... they're all kind of... they're not in continuity for, like, when they go out, you know, when they get released out for the Place to Be Nation people. But we've been just racking these up, and we're kind of nearing the end here. But, we're doing the divisional previews for the regular season, the 2014-15 NBA regular season. There's six of them. The one that we're doing today is going to be the Northwest Division. That's up in the... obviously in the Northwest area, silly me. And so we obviously have one team that's well on top here, right?
Yeah, this is just a one team division, and a lot of garbage in this division, but same can be said for all of them.
Yeah, so we're going to get to a team that hasn't been on top of the division, even though they're Rocky Mountain High in more ways than one. And that would be the Denver Nuggets out in Denver, Colorado. They usually are a really good team. They haven't had a losing record since 2003. Even back to when they had Carmelo Anthony as a rookie, they still had winning seasons and they would always make the playoffs. But it seems like they never really go any farther than the first round. And last year was their first losing record since 2003. Can you explain in any ways, short form, why?
Well, they overachieved with George Karl, and he wore out his welcome, and just a lot of injuries with this team, so they were just totally decimated last year.
Yeah, their injuries were just, putrid. I mean, every single person that could have gotten hurt for some length of time got hurt. Danilo Gallinari, who had already torn his ACL before this, he tore his ACL again, so he didn't even play a single minute last season. JaVale McGee was out for almost the entire year. Ty Lawson was out with an injury. Nate Robinson, who was one of their key signings in the summer of 2013, he was out. Everything just seemed to go wrong for them. They had a new head coach, like you were saying, because George Karl was fired because they couldn't make an agreement about a new contract extension. So they hired Brian Shaw, who was an assistant with the Indiana Pacers. Some of y'all may know him as a guy who had played with the LA Lakers in the early 2000s under Phil Jackson when they had Shaq and Kobe. But I don't know. Brian Shaw's first year there as a head coach wasn't the best.
It wasn't the best, but like I said, is it because he's a bad coach or because he had no one to play for him because everyone was injured at one point or another?
Yeah, you said that about Brad Stevens with the Boston Celtics. Now, that team might actually be bad. We think that this team is actually pretty good. You know, they got, if you look at the roster up and down, it's a deep team. There's guys that could start on a lot of other bad teams in the NBA. And they're kind of plentiful. They don't really overpay for a lot of their guys, even though their salary cap right now is right around in the $70 million mark. So they don't really have any more room to work with salary. But when you look at the names they have here, we've already talked about Ty Lawson. He's I wouldn't call him an all-star point guard, but a really good point guard, right?
He is in that next level tier with Mike Connolly and
Jeff Teague.
Yeah, those players who are not going to be the super all-stars, but the ones who are more than capable of handling your team.
You got JaVale McGee. I mean, he's Shaq. He's Mr. Shaq and a fool. Everybody knows that. He kind of makes an ass out of himself with some pretty boneheaded mistakes. But he's a really long-armed, tall center who can be a real presence. Wilson Chandler is just a solid hand. Timothy Mozgov is a great rebounder. I think he had the game high in rebounding last year with 29 rebounds. And one of the guys that you and I both like, Kenneth Faried, nicknamed the Manimal. Did you watch him in the FIBA World Cup?
The FIBAs were set up for him. The way the Euro game is, you don't have that 7 foot, 300 pound center, so you need that 6'7", 6'8" guy running around, you know, not being a stretch four or stretch five, like it seems like everyone in Europe has one.
Yeah, and he seemed to fit that style of play really well, where he'd be able to run the court and then block shots and get easy putbacks on dunks when defensive assignments would fall apart. He was just really good at running the court, and he obviously learned that under George Karl, I guess you could say, in Denver, because they pretty much played that way all the time at a really quick pace. With Brian Shaw, it was a little interesting because they still ran a continuous pace like they had under George Karl, but it was a little bit of a different team. Do you think that Brian Shaw was having trouble trying to get them to play his way?
Well, it's just a matter of figuring out what kind of team do I have, because when you have, let's say, you have Mozgov on the court. That's going to be a lot different when you have Hickson playing center. Yeah. Those are two completely different teams depending upon who you put out there.
Hickson's undersized, but a big-time energy guy.
Yeah, and Mozgov's just slow and big. So your team is different based on every night situations, and I think it was just a lot of trial by fire sort of last year. And also, it didn't help they lost out on Iguodala, who they expected to come back a couple years ago.
I thought that was addition by subtraction, to be honest with you. I didn't think he was a good fit there.
Well, he wasn't the best fit, but it's not like Wilson Chandler really replaced him. And, you know, Gallinari's been injured, so we can't mention him.
Yeah. What's interesting about this team is that if you look at their salary cap going forward, after 2016, they really only have three players that are locked in. Actually, four. One is Lawson. The other is Kenneth Faried. He just signed an extension. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I'd have to imagine it's in double-digit salary.
It was 4 years, $50 million, I believe.
Yeah, that's a good number for him.
It's fair. Yeah, it's about what he should have been paid.
I just hope he doesn't eat the cheese, you know. I hope he doesn't get lazy on us. And then some rookies they have. Eric Green, who was a... I think he led the nation in scoring a couple years ago at Virginia Tech. He played a year overseas, and now he's coming over. And then there are two rookies. One is Gary Harris. I saw him at Michigan State. He's a shooting guard, but he's got some defensive skill. He's a very good three-point shooter, especially on the corners. I like him. And then there's this...
Yusuf Nurkic.
And they also got a big guy, Yusuf Nurkic. Now, looks like he came from... Bosnia, how do you say that?
He is from Bosnia-Herzegovina. Okay. He played in the Croatian League. He is a big boy. I believe he's like 19 or 20. He's almost 7 foot, and he's like 290, 300.
Very raw offensively. I almost don't expect him to score at all. But rebounding-wise, I've been looking at preseason box scores, and this dude can rebound. I mean, he is
going to be good. He's really immature at this age, too. He has the size, he has the body, he has a mean streak. He's just sort of a head case right now. And he was sort of one of those question marks, like, why did he come over?
Yeah, well,
there's not really minutes for him.
At first, but now it looks like he might actually get minutes, depending on the health of McGee. And if, you know, Hickson's coming off an injury, too. So we'll see what happens with him. I think he'll actually play a little bit because of the fact that he's such a good rebounder. I didn't even mention him and Mozgov together. So that's going to be interesting. He reminds me a little bit of a young Nikola Pekovic. You know, Pekovic kind of plays like him too. So I think he's going to work out well. I think they may have gotten a steal there. I was surprised, like you said, though, that they brought him over immediately because I thought they were at least going to wait a year, but they must have liked him just enough to bring him in. The team was good offensively. You know, they usually are, but it felt like you were saying, that they had an identity crisis where they didn't know if they wanted to be a passing team, if they wanted to shoot the ball, if they wanted to be like a team that was high on assists. It just seemed like every game they were trying to feel their way through what they wanted to do, and they just never, ever figured it out. And by the time they started getting on a bit of a run, they would drop with an injury, and then they would have to start all over again.
Yeah, they didn't know who they wanted to be, and nobody really stepped up to say, okay, this is my team.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really frustrating. Like, they were extremely efficient. They were, I believe, second in rebounds, ninth or tenth in points in game, top half in assists. It was just nobody wanted to be the leader.
Yeah, Randy Foy had a really good year. I think he's back, right? He's back. Aaron Brooks is gone, though. He went to the Chicago Bulls. They also brought in a familiar face. It was actually somebody that they had traded away in the 2012 deal that brought in Andre Iguodala, and that was Aaron Aflalo. Now, we already talked about Aflalo on the Orlando preview, but do you think that he'll fit in just as well in Denver the second time around as he did the first time? Because I thought he played okay when he was in Denver.
He played well, and now he's 2 years wiser. So maybe he can be that savvy veteran players will lean on now.
So they have him in. He's going to be playing alongside Lawson, obviously, with Randy Foy as the backup. We already talked about how the front court is just so overstocked that it's kind of hard to figure out who's going to play in what rotation. I do like Quincy Miller. He's a nice little piece that they have. He's a small forward. They did have a losing record, like we said. Do you think, though, that they'll have a second losing record in a row?
No, I think if, you know, now that they're all healthy, Nate Robinson also returns from an ACL injury who provides buckets and not much size, but they should be improved with their health. Brian Shaw has a year under his belt now, so the team should rebound nicely, I believe.
I think this is a situation where everything that Brian Shaw wanted to do when he first got there, he needs to just ditch and just go with what he has. Because it seems like the team, it was almost like Memphis. Memphis, when Dave Joerger first took over there, he almost tried to push the tempo and make them a fast team, and they were losing games, and Memphis's players said, no, we like to play slow. We like to keep things at an even keel. And they went back to that, and they started winning games again. I wonder if this is going to happen with Shaw, where he realizes that trying to slow the game down and being a defensive first or a disciplinarian type of coach doesn't work, and he needs to just kind of let his players play loosey-goosey. Because it seems like that's the best way for Denver, when they kind of go out and they do that back-and-forth game. So it'll be interesting. I think they're going to be back to having a winning record, but I don't know if it's going to be good enough in the Western Conference to make the playoffs, because there's just so much competition there.
This could be the one team, like, I'm predicting, like, 45 wins, they'll be over 500, but this could be the one team that sort of sneaks away into the playoffs this year, because people are sort of forgotten about them now. They haven't been relevant for a couple years, and
even making the playoffs, they weren't relevant.
Yeah, but now they're not even in the conversation of teams that could slip in, and I think they have the potential to shock some people.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and get out of Denver. That we're leaving one team that has a lot of questions, and we're going to go ahead and go to a team that has even more questions heading into the regular season, and that's the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Minnesota Timberwolves were pretty terrible for quite a while under David Kahn, with whatever coach you want to plug in there that he hired from. I'm trying to remember all of them. One of them was Kurt Rambis. The other one was Rick Adelman. And it just, none of them worked, and David Kahn was fired. Flip Saunders took over. He tried to convince Kevin Love to stay with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they had one of their better years last year. They were, I want to say, 41. They had 40, did they have 41 wins or 40 wins? I know they were like a game below 500. But it seemed like everything was going okay for the Minnesota Timberwolves, but not making the playoffs and being a middling team just wasn't good enough for Kevin Love.
Yeah, he was really hurt that he didn't get that max contract, and the team wasn't getting better. A lot of questionable signings, again, with bad coaches, and it was one of those, it's not his fault. He didn't want to stay, and he didn't want to make it public, and everyone sort of made it public for him.
Yeah, I don't think he made a huge issue out of it while the season was being played out. And he didn't do that willy or won't he kind of stuff. He just went ahead and played. Love had probably his best season yet as an NBA player. He averaged like 26 points, double-digit rebounds. he had another all-star season. Ricky Rubio was fully healthy. He played well. He's not a great scorer, but he averaged 8.6 assists. And now, that connection between Rubio and Love, a lot of people were talking about it going into that season, but it didn't catch fire. Like, they didn't have a 50-win season and go on a torrid pace. So we just wound up with kind of just another team in Minnesota.
Yeah, they've been classic underachievers and just bad fits for the roster. And, you know, like Kurt Rambis desperately tried to stubbornly install the triangle and didn't have the players to do so. And bad drafting left and right and
yeah, you
all
remember when
around.
They had Al Jefferson and Kevin Love and they refused to play Love because they wanted Jefferson to play the five.
Yeah, and then, you know, we're not going to even mention Johnny Flynn, Wesley Johnson, and just... You know, even Shabazz Muhammad last year.
Just for historical perspective, for those who are not in the know, in the 2009 draft, they had two picks, and instead of taking Steph Curry, they took Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio, which has incensed Minnesota fans to this day.
Take two point guards back-to-back, and one is out of the league, and the other, you know, and Rubio's still...
He's perfectly acceptable. We'll actually jump to him for a second, because he's a restricted free agent. Do you expect him to get something in the $13 million range, kind of like Eric Bledsoe?
I think some team is going to force their hand. I think somebody's going to sign him to a contract, and then Minnesota will be forced to decide. I think Minnesota's trying to lowball him, obviously. I believe they offered him, like, 4 years and 48, and you know, his agent was like, no, I'm taking a max deal or nothing. And it's like, well, you're not going to get a max deal.
Oh, well, time will go by with that one, and we'll find out. Kevin Love is out of the equation now, though, because the inevitable happened, and they traded him to the Cleveland Cavaliers. In a three-way involving Cleveland and Philadelphia, they wound up with Thaddeus Young, who's a good player. He's got an annual salary of $9 million for the next 2 years with a player option in that second year. So he's going to be around for at least a season. They also got, through that trade, Cleveland's last two number one overall picks in the NBA draft. One was Anthony Bennett, who was a disaster last season. Do you expect anything out of Bennett?
Unfortunately, no, because he plays the same position as Young. And where is he going to find minutes?
I liked him a little bit at UNLV when he was a one-and-doner, but I just didn't think he was the number one pick. The moment they picked him, Cleveland did, I just knew. I was like, this is a reach, and he's going to have this stigma on him like Andrea Bargnani did, where if he's even average, people will call him a failure. So I kind of feel bad for him, because if he was like a low lottery guy, I think people would have liked him a lot more.
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't his fault Cleveland chose him. It wasn't his fault he was injured for most of the season. And, you know, okay, yes, he came in unconditioned and fat, but...
And it was a bad draft.
It was a bad draft, and you can't just write him off after 1 year. Kids need time to develop, but, you know, even these one-and-done kids. And, you know, you have to give them time.
Yeah, they have Bennett there. The other number one overall pick that they got, who we haven't seen yet in an NBA regular season, is Andrew Wiggins, who was a big-timer coming out of high school. He's originally from Canada. His father is Mitchell Wiggins, who played in the NBA with the Houston Rockets and some other teams in the 80s. This guy is a super athletic small forward. I think he'll be an elite defensive player in time. Do you like him as a player?
Yeah, the knock on him was he doesn't take over games and he's not a big leader. You don't need to be the number one guy in order to be really good. You could just be a laid-back personality and score buckets.
So I think he'll fit in okay. It'll be interesting because they have Corey Brewer. Corey Brewer was another miscellaneous guy like Terrence Ross that somehow had a 50-point game. So obviously Corey Brewer's having the best days of his career in Minnesota. So it'll be interesting to see how they play Brewer alongside Wiggins. Maybe they can move Wiggins to shooting guard, even though Wiggins is not even close to a good shooter. Kevin Martin is there.
Yeah, Kevin Martin's there.
I know, and they have J.J. Barea as the backup to Ricky Rubio. Mo Williams they sign in free agency. He might battle it out with J.J. Barea for that backup spot. In fact, if Rubio gets hurt, you could easily see Mo Williams as a starter. Poor Shabazz Muhammad, I don't think he's going to be doing anything even remotely close to an impact on the Timberwolves team.
No, he didn't do himself any, you know, he was that number one kid coming out of high school. He tanked at UCLA, and he's tanking here, and he's, you know, he's had opportunities, especially on a bad team. And if you can't get on the court, you know, Jordy Dang, who was just sort of like a written off backup center, has emerged.
He looked great in the FIBA World Cup when he was with Senegal. Now, obviously, when you're one of the top players on these smaller countries, you're going to have the ball given to you all the time because you're the man. And so his numbers were a little inflated, but he played a lot better down the stretch in his rookie year because he's a really good rebounder. He does have a jump shot, even though people don't believe it. And he's a good shot blocker. He played at Louisville and when they won the national championship. So he's got a winning pedigree. So I think Jang is actually a nice replacement for Love alongside Nikola Pekovic, even though the scoring goes way, way down when you put Gorgui Jang in.
Yeah, well, it's funny, like, Minnesota fans have already, they don't like Pekovic anymore. They're like, they thought...
They think he's overpaid.
Yeah, they think he's overpaid. He's the one who sort of tanked the season, and he's not good for the team, and they want Dang in, and it's... I don't know. They have a lot of exciting youth who are a couple years away from contending, especially, like, their draft pick this year. They got Zach LaVine, who I compare to Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to play. He doesn't really shoot well, but he can run around the gym.
Yeah. So he's a spectacular dunker. I'm almost sure he's going to be in the dunk contest, which doesn't really mean anything, but, you know.
Yeah, and that's just the same way Gerald Green was coming out of high school. All he could do is dunk and run around, and let's hope he can learn how to play.
Yeah, I think you'll see LaVine a little bit, just in little spurts. I don't think he'll start, but he might surprise kind of in the same way like you said, Giannis Antetokounmpo did in Milwaukee, where he doesn't have to do a lot. He just needs to make a play every now and then. The player that everyone's going to obviously be watching is Rubio, because it basically is his team now that Love is gone. With Love there, because of how great of a shooter he was, they were a really good offensive team. Their offensive numbers across the board were great. The only thing they weren't good at was three-point shooting. Their three-point shooting percentage was 26th. But outside of that, their numbers offensively were good. But with Love out of the mix, and with Flip Saunders back in as the head coach, he was the team president, and when Rick Adelman retired, Flip went back into the coaching seat. So with him there, do you see more of a balanced team, or do you think they're going to have trouble figuring out what to do?
I don't know, because we say this every time there's a new coach or GM, like every 2 or 3 years. The only constant they have done is continually sign backup point guards. With Mo Williams, a couple years ago, J.J. Barea, the kid from Oregon.
Oh, Luke Ridenour.
That's all they do every year is just give Ramon Sessions they signed.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep giving 4-year deals to backup point guards. Other than that, they sign weird people like Corey Brewer. How does he fit? Chase Budinger. How did he fit?
Slasher U, I called it when David Kahn was there. All he would do was sign tweener small forwards that had great athleticism, guys like Derek Williams, Wesley Johnson, guys that look like they could jump out the gym but just didn't know how to play.
Yeah, they're just like, I'll get you players and you mold them. And it just doesn't – they don't have – are they trying to tank? Are they trying to make a playoff push? It's sort of half and half now. Like, if you're going to tank, okay, get rid of Thaddeus Young. Get rid of Kevin Martin. Are you going to make the playoffs? All right, let's get rid of some of your young people. You can't have half and half. And that's what they've been doing, is they keep thinking we could be a playoff team. We're going to strive for the number 8 seed is like their goal, it seems.
I don't think they can make the playoffs, but they only won 40 games last year, even with Kevin Love. Do you think they can do better than that?
Oh, no, they're going to be down deep in the lottery. They'd be under 30 wins easily.
Under 30, so that's a little bit – that's kind of back to what they were probably the last couple of years anyway before they had their 40-win season. So it actually is kind of – it's actually more – the more things change, the more they stay the same, I guess, for Minnesota, because that's been their destiny for the last few years, ever since they traded Kevin Garnett. Even when they traded, even before they traded Garnett, they were sort of kind of middle of the pack. Then when they traded him, they went back down to like just being in the bottom of the league. You think that's the same thing here with Love gone?
Pretty much. It's by default they're in the bottom. I don't think they're trying to be in the bottom. It's just now their lack of talent is coming forward, and if you choose to start these high-priced people you got, like Martin and Budding, okay. If you want to develop your guys, there's nothing wrong with tanking a year nowadays, as long as you play your young guys and get them experience. If you're just going to have them sit on the bench, what point does it do drafting Shabazz Muhammad if you're just going to cut him next year because he can't get on the court?
Shabazz Muhammad was just – I think they just picked him just because he was there. I don't think that anything else went to it. I think they just had a low lottery pick and they said, whatever, let's just take him. You know, the irony is that they had originally had Trey Burke and they traded him to the Jazz because they didn't need a point guard at the time. I would have just kept the pick.
What, and have more point guards?
Yeah, more point guards and more
small forwards. Well, they got Jang out of it, too, so.
Yeah, Gorgui Jang, you're right about that. So we're going to go ahead and leave Minnesota, and we're going to go to the top of the crop in the Northwest Division, who we were talking about at the top of the podcast, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder. It just feels like every year they're really – it's the same story with Oklahoma City in a way. It's only instead of being in the middle of the pack, they're always really, really good and always has the potential to either get to the NBA Finals, win an NBA championship, or get to the Western Conference Finals, thanks in large part to their trio of Kevin Durant, the league MVP, Russell Westbrook, one of the best point guards in the league, and Serge Ibaka, one of the best rebounders and shot blockers in the league. Now, we're taping this in the middle part of October, and news has just broken, literally, that Kevin Durant fractured his foot. So what kind of a blow is this going to be if he's going to be out for an anticipated amount of 6 to 8 weeks?
None, because it's the first 2 months, and they're still – it's not going to affect their – they weren't a borderline team. They just go from being the number one seed to be, you know, potentially number one to be number three now. And the thing about Oklahoma City is they are the team that all these other tanking teams are trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's just say when Harden was there, Durant was a number two pick. Westbrook was number four overall. Harden was number three overall. Ibaka, I think, was he ninth?
Yeah, he was in the 08 draft along with Westbrook. He came in, like, a little bit outside of the lottery.
Okay, but you have, you know, your top three guys were all top four picks, so mm-hmm. people forget how bad those
And don't forget Reggie Jackson, who was a first-round pick.
Yeah, he was a low pick. He was, like, 22nd, 26th.
Yeah, he was one of the last ones in 2012, I think. 2012 or 20. I think it was 2012.
And the problem with this team, now that Durant is out, is they sort of have that New England Patriots, oh, we can just train the next guy to do it. Let's let Harden go. Well, we have Jeremy Lamb. He's totally just as good. No, he's not.
Well, they were in a bit of a – they had their backs against the wall because of the fact that they had already given pretty close to max money already to Durant and Westbrook, and it was going to be really hard to convince James Harden to take anything less than – $14 million a year, which they would have been forced to do in order to not go way over in the luxury tax. And if you re-sign James Harden, then not only are you going over the luxury tax, you have to let Serge Ibaka go, which they needed Ibaka because of the fact that Kendrick Perkins, their starting center, who's in the last year of his contract this year, really, really dipped after he signed his extension. So they didn't want to let their big guy go, but they had to let James Harden walk away. And they wound up getting Lamb when the truth is the other first-round pick Houston had that year was Terrence Jones. And I think that was the mistake. They took Lamb instead of Jones.
Yeah, but the problem with that is, again, you know, you had all these young kids. You need to pay them. It's a very tiny window in the NBA, and I think Oklahoma City might have sort of missed it now by keeping Perkins in his horrible deal after all these years. And just look at their bench. Who do they have that can do anything on any team?
Well, it's kind of like we said the same thing about Chicago when they were winning titles in the 90s, like, people would say, well, man, John Paxson, like, if he played for, like, the Sonics, nobody would know who he is. Look at Horace Grant. He's not that great. He's just good because he's playing alongside Michael and Scotty. I mean, I guess you could say that about any team that wins a championship, but that's just the way it goes when you make up these teams. You get top players with, you know, high salaries, and then you kind of have to dip into the rookie pool and, like, the veteran pool, and you just kind of have to makeshift from there. What I like about Sam Presti is that he still goes out there and he uses first-round picks that he's gathered in order to pick up decent little pickups, like Steven Adams, the New Zealander who played at Pitt. He's a nice player. I thought he played well. Reggie Jackson turned out to be a good player. Andre Robertson is okay. Perry Jones was a bit of a disappointment. Lamb, we've already talked about a little bit. He needs to step up big time. It's still a team that's made up well, but I know what you're saying, that they have a lot of guys behind their top three players that probably wouldn't do that much damage.
That, and how come there are no veterans willing to take less to go there? Okay, yes, they made an attempt at Gasol, but it was really sort of half-hearted, it seemed, and
well, they had
nobody
Caron
expected
Butler.
Him to come. And yeah, Caron Butler, that was, I think, the first one, and other than that, you just don't see people going to play with Durant and Westbrook, and that's sort of telling in a way.
The only veterans they really brought in were Anthony Morrow, who's a really good three-point shooter. That was the only thing offensively that the Thunder kind of struggled at, three-point shooting. So Morrow will help them there. And they also brought in Sebastian Telfair, who I believe played in China last year. So we'll see what he does as a backup. He'll be the backup's backup because he'll back up Reggie Jackson. So
yeah, and but they trade, you know, they let Thabo Sefolosha go.
Yeah,
and so they got Morrow. So they traded defense for offense, and I don't think there's just much improvement with mm-hmm. this team.
Derek Fisher retired. He's now the head coach of the New York Knicks. So you lose a lot of veteranship there with Derek Fisher and Caron Butler, and you didn't really replace it that adequately. They used a first round pick on Josh Eustace, but they basically wasted the pick because they didn't even guarantee him a contract because they're so far against the cap. So they do have some younger guys. I guess Presti just wants to take the option of having younger guys learn alongside Durant and Westbrook instead of just bringing in veteran of the week and just hoping that they stick. But sometimes it goes like Miami did exactly that. They would just sign whatever name that they could find in the open market, and they would just tag them with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch and say, hey, could you try to help us out a little bit? You know, so it kind of works both ways. It could win you a championship, and sometimes the other way works too.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those stubborn, well, we'll develop our guys. Steven Adams will still be just as good, and Perry Jones is the next, you know, Kevin Garnett, and a lot of, you know, the draft is a crapshoot, and yes, I understand small market teams have to rely on it and sort of hope you hit a home run, mm-hmm. like they did with Durant and Westbrook, but more times than not, they're just, they don't, their bench is really hurting, and they did not address that need, and they were exposed last year for not having a bench.
Yeah, and it's hurting quite literally, because one of their rookies, Mitch McGarry, is going to be out a couple months too with a broken wrist. Do you think, now, we don't want to pour salt into the wound because of the fact that he has a broken foot, but did you think that Oklahoma newspaper criticism of Mr. Unreliable, did you think that was a fair criticism?
That's any city will do the exact same thing. It's just, that's just what the media does.
But do you think that there was a little bit of credence because of the fact that in the Western Conference Finals, he came up short, and Westbrook was the one that sort of had to step up a little bit while Durant... I felt like Durant kind of ran out of gas. Did you see it that way?
That's what I thought. You can't keep going out there, you know, day in, day out, without eventually having to slow down.
Averaging 2 points a game.
Averaging 32 points a game, you have two people on you. Okay, now, you know, defense, everybody's now playing against you. So, you know, plus people forgot Westbrook he was injured for half the season, so he had a lot fresher legs.
He had to carry that team into the new year, absolutely.
So, yes, did he run out of steam? Yeah, but that's, again, if you had a nice bench, you can sort of limit Durant's. Durant played 38 minutes a game last year. Mm-hmm. Those legs will wear out fast.
Yeah. Now Westbrook. Now the tables have turned because now Westbrook's the one that has to start out as the leader of the team. Do you think he'll be able to at least carry them to, let's say, like 11-5 or maybe like 20-10 while Durant is out? Do you think he could do that?
Yeah. There's no reason with if you know Durant is gone, you lose about 15 points a game by through his replacements, but you're not gonna. There's no reason they shouldn't still handily beat Minnesota, handily beat the Phoenixes out there. So it's not like they're a borderline team in the first place.
So they had 60 wins a couple of years ago. I think they had 59 last season. They lost to the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals. Do you see them – we'll just say this. Do they win 60 games again, or do they go back to winning 60 games?
No, well, now that Durant's out, that answers the question easily. I had them at a dip again this year. I had them at, I think, 56 or 57 wins.
If you had to match them up again, would you take the Clippers or the Thunder?
Clippers.
Do you take the Clippers this time?
I'll take the Clippers. Yes.
Okay. So that sounds like Oklahoma City might be taking a step back.
They might be taking a step back, but Durant's gone. If you're going to lose somebody for 2 months, the first 2 months is the perfect time to lose somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Let him rest. He was already going to be tired from Team USA. No, he took a Team USA off because
he took
tired.
It off after the Paul George injury and his shoe deal.
Yeah, so he, now he's injured. Okay, we won't see him till Christmas. That's fine. Nobody starts caring till after Christmas anyways.
Yeah, you just don't want to get behind the eight ball when it comes to the standings, especially in your own division, given that you got another team there that we're about to preview that had a really good year. So you don't ever want to wind up stuck behind a team and you're trying to play catch-up after the All-Star break, because that can turn into a real rat race. Okay, yeah. we're gonna go ahead and get away from Oklahoma City, and we're gonna leave one team that whose clock might be ticking a little bit, and we're gonna move on to another team that might have me having a little bit of a tick-tock to them, and that's the Portland Trail Blazers. The Portland Trail Blazers had an awful year in 2013 in Damian Lillard's rookie year. They were 33-49. I think they lost like their last 12 or 13 games of the regular season. And everybody was saying that LaMarcus Aldridge was looking to get out of Portland and sign elsewhere when his contract came up 2 years later. Well, lo and behold, everything clicked last year in the regular season for the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah, that was the difference between him and Love. Both are sort of similar. They're stat grabbers. The thing with Portland is Portland improved around him. Minnesota didn't improve. That's why one is still there, the other isn't.
Mm-hmm. They kind of revived Rip City a little bit. That's the nickname that Portland has given their team over the years, all the way back to 1977 when they won the NBA championship. Rest in peace, Dr. Jack Ramsey. He passed away last summer. They got to the second round of the playoffs after they eliminated the Houston Rockets in a really entertaining series. Damian Lillard hit a game-winning buzzer-beating three at the end of Game 6, but the Spurs just wiped them out. Did you see that coming, or was it sort of expected?
Oh, that was expected. People are way too high on Portland. And they have talent, but they just don't have that next level.
Mm-hmm.
And they, again, another thing these young teams are looking for, they built up through that. They kept trading draft picks and kept having multiple first rounds every year. And all it takes is having a couple come in for them to start doing well.
Yeah, they had two that stuck. One is Lillard. He's still on his rookie deal. We know that guy's going to get max money. He was an all-star by his second year in the league. I would actually go ahead and call Lillard an elite point guard on the same level as a guy like a Westbrook or a Chris Paul. I really think he's that good of a point guard. The other guy that already got paid at $11 million a year, and he's been playing very well and at a steady pace, is Nicolas Batum, the French small forward. Do you think that he's sort of the leader of the team, or you think it's Aldridge?
Aldridge is a leader. Batum is the glue guy. He is the one that doesn't – is he an all-star in any category? Not really, but he just does everything well. You know, 13 points, 7 rebounds, almost a steal a game, 5 assists. Not, overall, he's the one that seems to hold the team together.
They basically have the same team back. They didn't really do a lot of additions and subtractions. The only guy that they lost, the only two that they lost, was Mo Williams. He went to the Timberwolves, and they lost Earl Watson. The only additions they made, they brought in Steve Blake, who's going to probably take the place of Mo Williams, and they brought in your best friend, Chris Kamen. He's going to probably help relieve Robin Lopez, who surprisingly had one of his best seasons as a big man.
He's finally coming into his own. It was the joke. You know, Brook Lopez was the good one. Robin,
well, he's got
just
the Sideshow Bob hair. That's the other.
Yeah, one. He got the first round deal only because he played with his brother, and he has finally developed into a respectable center.
Mm-hmm. They have one of the most solid starting fives in the league with Lillard, Batum, Wesley Matthews, who we didn't talk about yet, Aldridge, and Lopez. Their bench, however, was pretty weak.
Their bench is filled with failed first-round picks of
Darrell
theirs.
Wright.
Darrell Wright was just one of those high school kid to pros who bounced around. And CJ McCollum was injured. First-round pick. Victor Cleaver, first-round pick. Joel Freeland, first-round pick. Miles Leonard, first-round pick. So with having all these first-rounders, you can see the crappy ones are now on the bench, and I like how they addressed their bench by getting Blake and Kamen, but you need to really spell Wesley Matthews and Batum, and you're going to do that with Doral Wright?
Well, okay. Wesley Matthews is in the last year of his deal. I think they'll re-sign him to an extension. I think he's a very vital part of that team. I loved him when he was at Utah, coming out of Marquette, and he's played just as well in Portland as he did there. I think he's a solid hand. I don't think he's going to be dipping anytime soon. I think the two players that they need to watch, at least to try to improve if the team's going to get better, are the two players that come out of that bench. One is Thomas Robinson, and that's because Robinson did play a lot more than a lot of the other bench guys did because he's a big man that helps out LaMarcus Aldridge because he's got physicality. But as a number, I think he was a number 4 overall pick. He has been a little bit of a disappointment, so I hope he kind of steps in and plays a little bit better. The other one who kind of overachieved and is going to be a restricted free agent is Will Barton. And I thought he played very well in little spurts. I just want to see if he can get a little bit more play in the rotation for the Portland Trailblazers next season, because I thought he was a surprise.
He stepped up on the team, but don't they have a lot of free agents this coming year?
They do. They do. We already talked about Matthews' contract being up. Robin Lopez, he's in his last year. Chris Kamen has a team option. Thomas Robinson will be back the year after that, probably. Darrell Wright, Joel
Marcus Aldridge.
Well, that's the big elephant in the room. And I think the interesting thing is that Carmelo Anthony was in the same situation with the Knicks, where his contract year was the following year, but in 2013, he peaked. And the team peaked, and they got to the playoffs and did very well. But what happened is, in his contract year, the following season, the Knicks went into the shitter, and everybody started, and all that talk about Carmelo leaving New York kind of like perked up again. Do you think that might happen to Portland, where they sort of sink a little bit, and LaMarcus Aldridge starts having second thoughts?
No, because Portland and New York are two different places, and they already had that will he leave a couple years ago, and they're going to give him a max deal, barring some catastrophic injury. But the problem with this is, you know, he's already peaked. I don't think he can get any better. And is Lillard going to get any better? He started out hot and is sort of slowly tapering off now to that high level he is.
Yeah, I think Lillard will be fine, but I think you're right about Aldridge. But the thing with Aldridge is that he's such a steady player that I don't think he's going to get a lot worse in the next few years. I think he's like Nowitzki in that way. I think he's just going to be very good all the time until he gets to his like mid-30s, and then it really starts to drop off. That's just my opinion about it. So,
yeah,
go ahead.
So, the question is, how high is this team's ceiling? Are they a championship contender now? Not really. So what do you do to become that one?
Well, that's the problem, and that's why we say the clock is ticking, because what are they going to be in 3 years? I mean, if they're as good now as they can be, then and they overachieve to get to that point, then what are you going to expect out of them in 2016 and 2017 unless they make a major addition to their roster and they add some piece to it that really puts them over the top? You can get a superstar player. That's the only way that could happen, and I don't think they're really built to add another piece like that. So they had 54 wins. They had a 21-game improvement. But do you think that they're going to – obviously, they're not going to have another 21-game improvement, but do you see them going backwards?
Oh, yeah. I see regression from them. I don't think they have that high level. I, you know, 50 wins maybe.
Do you think they were a flash in the pan?
Yeah, kind of. It was just that 1 year. There's too many guys who have contracts coming up. Mm-hmm. That they need to, you know, sort of worry about that. So,
yeah,
I don't see them. There's a lot of teams have gotten better. This team sort of stayed as they are.
Yeah, they stood pat basically. You know, and sometimes that's not the worst thing. The Golden State Warriors basically did the same thing. So
they did the same thing, but you're doubling down on Wesley Matthews and Robin Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Are they bad players? No, but you need them to be better than what they've been.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If they overachieved last year and that's what you got, what are you going to expect out of them going forward? I think that's the troubling part for Portland fans expecting them to get to the NBA Finals. I think you're going to be waiting for a much longer time than you expect. But things are looking good in Portland. I just think you need to keep your expectations tempered, because I don't think they're going to be going really, really far, but they're going to be a good team again. We're going to go ahead and leave Portland, and we're going to go to another team that was once the gold standard from these five teams in this division back in the 1990s, and now they're just scratching to get back to relevancy, and that's the Utah Jazz. Utah was sort of just hanging around for a couple of years with Paul Millsap, Al Jefferson, Derek Favors. They had a lot of front court guys. They barely missed the playoffs in 2013, and Millsap went to the Hawks. Al Jefferson signed with the Bobcats, and what happened after that?
Then you just get a lot of first-round picks and miscellaneous players.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're starting to pay their miscellaneous players, and we have no idea what is going on with this team.
Now, this team, I wouldn't call this a blatant tank, though. You wouldn't say that, huh?
No, the problem is this team is just riddled with quote-unquote potential.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they – is there any superstar on this team? You've now paid Derek Favors and Gordon Haywood as your two superstars. Okay, so you can't be officially tanking if you're giving those guys, you know, max deals. Derek Favors is getting like $12 million a year. So are they good players? Yes, but now you have to stop tanking. And Enes Kanter, if it's his fourth year, we still don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm. Gordon Hayward got a offer sheet from the Charlotte newly named Hornets for 4 years around the $60 to $70 million mark, somewhere in that area, and Utah matched the deal, so they've got Gordon Hayward for 4 more years at a $14 to $15 million salary. Derek Favors has 4 more years, $12 to $13 million, so he's going to be around for the long haul unless they could trade him. After that, Enes Kanter, he's going to be a restricted free agent coming up. I don't know what he's capable of. So is Alec Burks. I think he's been a disappointment. The one guy that they have picked up in the draft with those draft picks that I think is going to stick is Trey Burke, the rookie out of Michigan, who was the Naismith Player of the Year. I thought he played well his rookie year.
Which is funny. You draft Alec Burks from Colorado as a point guard. Mm-hmm. Next year, 2 years later, oh, let's draft another point guard. This year, let's draft a third point guard. Trey Burke, he had his ups and downs like any point guard. Mm-hmm. Point guard is the toughest position it has the highest learning curve.
Yeah, and he's terribly undersized.
Correct. So, did he have his moments? Yes. Did he have some horrible moments? Yes. Mm-hmm. And you take the good, you take the bad, and then you have the Utah Jazz.
Richard Jefferson's gone. Marvin Williams is gone. Those were two expiring contracts that they had gotten. Well, one they had gotten from the Warriors. The other one they got from the Atlanta Hawks. They are now finished. Brandon Rush went back to the Golden State Warriors. Jamal Tinsley is gone. Deontay Garrett is gone. John Lucas III is out of there. So they have a couple of changeovers. They drafted Dante Exum, a point guard out of Australia. And you just talked about all the confusion of why they've been drafting point guards, and they draft another point guard.
Yeah, they were caught up in the hype about his intrigue and his mystery and his 6'6 size and
the unknown. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were really fascinated, and that's one of those we need to get a home run pick, so let's just take him and see who he is. Mm-hmm. Will he be any good? What do you think?
I think him as a point guard works better than as a shooting guard, which is what it seems like they're trying to do. Because I think his potential as a 6'6 point guard would have worked a lot better. I actually would have liked him in Orlando playing alongside Victor Oladipo, because it would have let Oladipo play two guard, and Dante Exum could have played naturally at point guard. Instead, now with Exum with his 6'6 frame, you got to let him play. He's going to have to learn to play shooting guard off the ball while Trey Burke handles it, unless you do something sort of like they do with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, where McCollum comes in and he plays the same style, only different in height. So I don't know if it's going to work. You know, I thought it was a little bit of a gamble for Utah. I think he would have been a good fit somewhere else.
Yeah, it is just, again, you're drafting miscellaneous players who don't...
Steve Novak.
Yeah, Steve Novak, Rudy Gobert, the 7-foot Frenchman.
Now, Rudy Gobert actually had a great game for the French team against Spain. France beat Spain in one of the biggest upsets in the history of international basketball in the quarterfinals of the FIBA World Cup. And Gobert played very, very well, blocking all the Gasol shots. So I wonder if he'll be improved.
Yeah, but he's still incredibly thin.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to put on some pounds before he starts to... really dominate those boards.
Yeah, there you have a new coach. I thought that the guy before that, Ty Corbin, was one of the worst coaches in the NBA. He's a goner. And now they have Quinn Snyder. For those who remember that name a little bit, he was the head coach at the University of Missouri back in the college days. He left after a couple of controversies involving certain types of mishaps and violations, and he was fired at Missouri. And he wound up being a D-League coach for the Austin Toros. He was an assistant coach at CSKA Moscow, and he was an assistant coach last year with the Atlanta Hawks. So he's been around the pro circuit for quite a while, even though he was originally a college coach. But I don't know what kind of style he's going to – this one's kind of like Hornacek. I don't know what he's going to exactly do.
You don't know what he's going to exactly do. He has young athletic players who don't really have a direction right now.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's better you have a college coach as opposed to the NBA guy who already has his set ways and has been already through 5 teams and is just a retread. So maybe this way you have somebody who can mold this young team.
Yeah, the only good thing that we saw at Utah last year was that in the middle of the season, they were okay. Where they really, really doomed themselves was at the start of the season, at the end. They started 2-14. They had the worst record in the NBA to start, even worse than Philadelphia. And they finished the season 4-21. So if you consider those two records combined, the start and the end of the season, they were 6-35, which is really bad. So if they can at least get off to a good start, I think they'll be okay.
Well, let's not talk about the ending. The last 2 months was, what draft position can we get?
Yeah, forget the season.
So we know we're not going to be in the playoffs. Let's just be bad. So you can't be like, oh, well, they really tanked it. Well, a lot of teams tanked it at the last 2 months last year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of mysterious worst April records of all time.
Yeah, and they didn't really have an injury bug last year. So all those guys like Burke, Canner, Favors, Gordon Hayward, they all were able to play together and get a lot of reps together. Portland had the same thing the year before that, and they were terrible, and then they had a winning record. But do you think that Utah can possibly pull that off?
No, I don't think they have the talent to do so. If the potential starts cashing in, maybe will they make a leap as high as Portland did? No. Can they be a team who wins 30 games, 35? It's possible. I don't expect it, but you have Derek Favors is becoming a very good center. He has finally developed into that body.
And but he still has a ways to go, though.
But he's still young. He's only, I believe, 20.
Well, he was a one-and-doneer in 2010, so that would make him about, Georgia Tech. 25 years old.
He's 23 right now.
Okay.
He's 23, been in the league 4 years already, now starting to figure everything out. Okay, he will improve. Gordon Hayward, we assume, will improve.
Well, do you think Gordon Hayward's a max player or a guy who deserves max money?
No, he doesn't deserve max money, but it's not his fault somebody gave it to him. Are his numbers good? Yes.
16.2 points, 5 rebounds, 16, 5
assists. 5 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Those are great numbers. Are those number one guy numbers? No, you still need a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
But those are solid numbers.
Yeah, he's the de facto leader now. Now, he probably already was in the locker room, but now everybody knows it because of the paycheck that he's got coming into his mail every 2 weeks.
Well, I would assume Richard Jefferson would have been the leader, but it would have been
Richard Jefferson is the leader of nothing.
Leader of dumb tattoos. That little RJ, but again, credit to him for not covering it up. Just saying, it is what it is. And just keeping it for all those years.
Okay.
But this team is just really young, and they don't know what they're doing. And, okay, now you're going to have to pay them. So now you have young players, you still don't know what you have. Now you have the Jonathan Bender situation. If you remember Indiana, four years out of high
school. Jonathan Bender, he came out of Mississippi.
What did he do? We don't know. They still had to overpay him because they still thought he could add potential.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
It never came in, but you're getting these players. What do you do with Cantor?
Yeah,
I don't know.
You see that all the time where you see an overpay for somebody that you're not sure and you don't want to give up on them. I'm trying to think of more recent examples, but
you still have all these high school kids are, Doral Wright and Travis Outlaw, who are on their eighth team.
Martell Webster was amnestied and then got another payday from the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, you're getting these players, you're still like, well, they're only 28, they still have time to kick it in, right? Marvin Williams.
You're holding out for hope,
Yeah, Marvin Williams, Corey Maggette made it through his whole career being like, okay, this will be his year, right?
And now he's on NBA TV.
Yeah, so this is what Utah's faced with. You drafted these players, are they doing, Cantor, 12 points, 7 rebounds? Okay, what do you pay that? Is he going to get better? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect answer to how if Utah's going to get better. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I don't even think the Utah Jazz knows. But they do have a new coach. They have a new rotation. So it'll be interesting to see if they can make any headway there. That's going to be wrapping up the Northwest Division. We obviously think Oklahoma City is going to be probably back on top, even though the fractured foot injury to Kevin Durant is a really, really tough blow for them, at least at the start of the season. Portland Trail Blazers, it's not like they're going to be bad. We just don't know if they're going to be able to repeat what they did last year with the 50-plus wins, and especially given the fact that we don't see anybody that's going to be getting better on that team. We also have Minnesota. They're probably going to be dipping a little bit. Are they going to be third or fourth in the division? Are they going to be worse than Denver?
Yeah, Denver has a shot to do something. They'll be a borderline playoff team. Minnesota and Utah are just fighting for high draft picks at this point, which isn't a bad thing.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, Minnesota's the interesting young team, and Utah's kind of the uninteresting young team. So it's going to be fascinating to see which team kind of rises above the other, at least in the short term, versus the long term when they all start stocking up draft picks. But that's going to be doing it for here on the Northwest Division Preview. You can check out any of the other divisional previews that we have, Northwest, Pacific, Atlantic, Southeast, Southwest. I think I'm missing another, but that's okay. And
Central.
Central, yeah, that one, the one with LeBron in it. And you can listen to all of them along with the written previews. Trust me, these are time capsules. We did our homework. We are going to treat you fine when you listen to all of these. So on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We'll catch you off the bounce. Bye, guys.